ITS Coffee Break for Monday, October 6, 2008.
In this week's edition of the ITS Coffee Break, we'll introduce you to some interesting things that IT has going for this semester. In tech news, we're going to mention the Earth versus Space chess match, the Obama app for the iPhone, as well as some other applications that would enhance your use of the iPod Touch or your iPhone. In help news, we're going to let you know about the addition of hubs for your dorm or office.
Welcome to the ITS Coffee Break. My name is Ken Newquist.
And I'm Courtney Bentley.
And I guess the first thing we want to talk about is, we got another podcast out in a timely manner.
Yeah, relatively
timely. I think it's been less than a month.
That's pretty impressive.
So I think we'll just go ahead.
Of course, we did just turn the corner to October, so.
Yes, we haven't actually hit the point where we have two podcasts in a month, but in the same calendar month, but it is within the same, it's within 4 weeks of our last podcast, so. Clearly, we're making strides. But I think the first project we wanted to talk about was Spaces, which is something we mentioned in the last edition of the podcast, if I remember correctly. But we just wanted to let you know that it's coming along pretty nicely. There is actually something up at spaces.lafayette.edu. You can't use it yet. but hopefully, by the time you're listening to this podcast, you may be able to.
So just to recap, for those of you who may be coming in on this sort of fresh ears, what Spaces is actually what we have in mind is that this is a collaborative workspace for primarily faculty at this point. Basically a Moodle installation where we have Shibboleth enabled so that faculty from different institutions can actually log in and work in the same space.
Right. So I guess the way that we're planning on this working is it'll be running concurrently with regular Moodle, which means it'll be kind of standing side by side. Since it's Shibboleth enabled, people will be able to log in using their Lafayette network ID. But because SHIB is something that different institutions can use, they can help me here. I'm getting lost. People at other institutions will be able to log into Moodle using their Shibboleth IDs.
Yep.
So to start off, what we're doing is it'll be Lafayette's Shibboleth plus something called Protect ID, which is basically a service you can go to, and anybody can get a Shibboleth ID through Protect ID. And that will allow anybody at any institution to be able to log into Spaces. Now, once you actually log into Spaces, there's not going to be anything there yet because we haven't created any courses. So I think the way we're going to work this is if you're interested in doing something with Spaces, you should contact Courtney or myself. And you can just email us at our normal email addresses, or you can send an email to itsblog@lafayette.edu, and we'll set up a course for you there's going to need to be some hand-holding here to kind of walk you through how it works. And if there's another institution you want to work with that does use SHIB, we need to set them up as basically friends of Lafayette. On the back end so that we can say, yeah, you're allowed to get in here. So there is some work that needs to be done, and this is very much a pilot, so we're going to be trying things out. But so far, the technology works. We've tested it on the test version of the server, and now we're just getting ready to ramp it up for, well, I don't want to say production, but to actively use it for the pilot. So I mean, we have a couple of different people who are interested in this right now, right?
Correct. Yes. So. One of the first will be Manuel. Over in biology, he has a research organization who is going to actually be our first test case. So maybe we'll bring him in at some point later next semester and have him share that.
And then this is something that's come up many times, at least in the time that I've been at Lafayette, where people say, oh, well, I want to be able to work with somebody else at another institution. How can I do that? And well, no, this is the answer. So hopefully, I think it'll work.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting, an interesting test case.
Yeah.
And sort of show off the power of SHIB.
Yeah, exactly.
And what that does. So I guess another big project that is well underway, this semester we actually are in instructional technology. We are supporting close to 200 students who are working on video projects for the election night broadcast. So that's been fun. We've got several classes using iMovie to create segments. We've got one class who is getting a little more in-depth with their editing and using Final Cut Pro and some of the higher-end equipment. So it's been fun, but it's busy.
So I have a question for you, though.
What's that?
Which iMovie are they using?
They are using the one from...
The old one?
The old one.
iMovie HD. Not the...
Yeah. Yeah,
new agey, no, wonky, or
no, I didn't win that battle, so
I'm curious because I've never actually come back to using iLife 08. For those of you who don't know, iMovie went through a radical change, going from iMovie HD, which was kind of like a it used a lot of the same techniques, I guess, as Final Cut, right?
Yeah.
But with with iLife, or with the iMovie 08 version, it's just totally different. They kind of threw that whole paradigm right out the window and came up with something else that's entirely different. It looks a lot more user friendly, but in terms of like something that has like kind of like training wheels for Final Cut,
it's not.
It's a radically different idea. So I'll be interested to see what happens when people actually start using that. But in any case, shall we move on to tech news?
I think so.
So there's all kinds of cool stuff that are going on in tech news this week. The first one, which
Ken was very geeked out about.
I was
this.
Very geeked out about it. And it's partly because I've been playing chess with my daughter, but partly just because, yeah, guys, I used to be on the chess team when I was in high school. So I think I always come back to chess at one point or another. But in any case, there is a chess match going on between the Earth and the International Space Station. The way that this is working is that the chess team at the Stevenson Elementary School in Bellevue, Washington, is coming up with basically four moves that they'll make each day. Then the world gets to vote on which of those moves should be sent up to the space station. The space station crew then makes their decision as to what move they want to make to react. That gets beamed back down again, and the whole thing repeats. So
just to make sure you caught this is an elementary school?
Yes, they're the national champions, I believe.
Picking the four moves.
K through third grade.
Which is just
awesome. So, because my daughter is in kindergarten, so it was really cool to be able to share this with her, that somewhere in the country there are kindergartners who are playing against astronauts on the International Space Station. So
maybe I should learn to play chess.
It's pretty nifty. So yeah, that warmed my geeky heart. We have a link to this in the show notes where you can actually go. You can see the moves, you can vote for it, and you can see how the game is unfolding. So in other geeky news, I guess we're going to talk about the iPhone a little bit. Yes.
Yeah, it seems to come up. I think it's like our new test bed for things.
Yeah, well, and it's people have been doing a lot of interesting things with it. So.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I walk around campus and I see students with them and I see faculty with them. And today at the board meeting, there were several board members who their phone kept checking email and I kept looking at mine thinking that it was mine. But no, it was our board members.
Which, as a brief aside, I do want to at some point, I need to set up like some Google alerts or something to track Android, because Google's phone is actually out now. There are people who have the Google-branded phone, which is open source. I think T-Mobile is the ones who, is it the G1 or something like that?
I think so.
I think one of my friends actually just got it. So I think I'll be seeing him tonight. And if so, then I'll be able to check
report
it out. Pour
it in.
More. Right.
Yeah.
So, but no one I know has one of those. And well, you have the iPhone. I have the development version of the iPod Touch that we're using in the department. So that's why we always talk about iPhones. But in any case, the big news is the, well, I don't know if it's big
news.
Well,
it's not really big news, but I just think it's very interesting. I recently came across the Obama 08 app for the iPhone. And of course, we had to download it. But it's got some interesting integration as far as it basically skims your contact list on your iPhone and organizes people based on their area code. So it's intelligent enough to go through the phone book, find area codes, place them in key battleground states, and gives you the ability to track whether or not you've called these people and whether or not they're voting one way or the other, or if you need to, like my in-laws, call them the day of the election and remind them to go vote, or, you know, whatever the case is. Right. So I think that's really kind of an interesting sort of move on both the political and technology front. And then beyond that, you know, it has other sections in it for news and sort of calendar of events, and it's a really slick, nice interface.
And it also has that the issues, I don't want to call it a database, right, but like a collection of issues where you can get where Obama stands on different things.
Right, and gives you links out so that you can go beyond the app to continue digging around about the information. So it's pretty cool. I mean, I think regardless of which way you lean politically, I think from a technological standpoint, I think it's very interesting. And I will be, as we sort of were discussing off microphone, I'll be very interested if Obama wins to see if this current trend of making use of technology in appropriate ways will continue sort of beyond the campaign and the election.
Well, this actually, I don't have it in the show notes. So I'll see if I can find it after the fact. But Tim O'Reilly, O'Reilly Books, just started up a new foundation. Because what he was talking about was that Web 2.0 is cool and all. It's enabled our cats to blog. But, you know, are we using this to solve real-world problems?
Right.
And I think in terms of mobilizing and connecting people, Web 2.0 has been really strong at that. But it hasn't necessarily dealt with, you know, big issues. So what he was planning on doing was through this foundation basically trying to divert some of that attention onto big issues. And I can see this kind of, you know, this app is, while it's a political app, I think it's an indication of things to come where you're trying to mobilize people, you're trying to give them the tools they need to do something with, you know, it can be pretty cool.
That's right.
So
leading into another tool that you mentioned here, this is a little more geeky than
yeah, this is downright nerdy.
Political. But I mean, but Ken, of course, you know, has the iPod Touch, and we've been doing testing on various things for the department, and one of the things he found is this thing called Touch Term, right?
Right. So what this is basically doing is allowing you to have SSH command line access from your iPhone or your iPod Touch. So you can pull it up. It'll handle private public keys. You can authenticate to your server, and you know, if you're like me and you actually have to get to the command line occasionally to go do stuff, you can do it right on your iPhone securely.
So basically, what this means is that all the nerds of the world can walk around with their iPhones and get work done.
Yeah, in theory. I mean, I mean, it's like no one's going to want to write code on this thing. It's, you know, the screen's still microscopic, but you know, if you wanted to, I don't know that I've had a lot of need for this, but there have been times where I want to troubleshoot something, and you know, you need to be able to get to something from the phone. It's kind of cool.
Well, I mean, so you would be able essentially to like SSH into Moodle and kick off a cron job or something, right?
If I had my private key installed.
If you had your private key installed. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So if I wanted to access my own personal web server or whatever, I could do it. You know, it's pretty nifty. I like it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I keep using my phone more and more, like traveling and stuff. And I don't know how I did anything before I lost my phone in Denver.
Yeah. That worked out well, didn't it?
It totally worked out well. I was in New York City last week and just couldn't even imagine how I would get around without my iPhone.
It is just ridiculously convenient because I set up my mail and stuff and my work mail on it, my work calendar Touch, and just to be able to keep track of what's going on. I mean, any PDA is going to allow you to do some of this stuff, but to be able to browse and how it all comes together is, I think, what really makes it special.
Yep.
And that's why I'm interested to see how the Android shakes out because, you know, will it be able to kind of be the glue that pulls together a lot of cool apps like the iPhone has been able to do.
Right.
So that's really ultimately, I think, what Google and its partners have to come up with the cool apps that do this stuff. So we'll see.
So another product that is trying to compete against the iPod Touch, I think, is really where it's sort of
itself. Especially since Apple's been kind of shifting the iPod Touch towards gaming.
Right. So Nintendo just released in Japan the DSi, right? So the Nintendo DS, which Ken and I have talked about in the past, for those of you who are longtime listeners, we have our little Nintendo DS time. But so the DSi looks really cool. They've like integrated a camera, and it has the ability to play music, and a browser, and an SD card slot for memory, and it's pretty interesting.
It's got bigger screens. It ditches the backwards compatibility with the Game Boy Advance, which I only used once or twice. I think it's time to move on. Right? Yeah. And they're saying that this isn't necessarily replacing the normal DS. I'm somewhat skeptical, but yeah, we'll see. But yeah, it looks pretty cool. I mean, I'd be interested to see one of these things. I mean, form factor-wise, I think it's about the same size as the old one. It's just a little bit lighter because they got rid of the Game Boy Advance stuff, and I think it's a little bit thinner.
Yeah,
but it looks about the same.
Pretty interesting.
I would like to see one. I'd like to see how the screens are. I mean, I have one of the old, really old at this point, clamshell ones. And, I mean, every time they come, when the new DSs came out, I wanted one. And these, well, all the more so.
Yeah. But, so maybe we need to fly to Japan to get one.
Yeah, so I think they're coming out in Japan this fall. They're coming out in Europe in the spring. I don't know when they're coming out in the United States. The story that I read was actually, I think it was on BBC. So, oddly, they didn't. Normally, they would include the North American release. So, I have no idea when we're getting this thing. But I guess in Japan, the PlayStation Portable has actually been picking up in terms of popularity. It's been outselling the DS. So, I think that's why they're releasing it in Japan first, because they want to try and capture that momentum.
Yeah.
So,
interesting. So, last bit of tech news. I know we're sort of bombarding you with lots and lots of things, but there's just cool stuff going on right now.
Yeah.
So, another sort of gaming thing that's come up actually in education conversations is Spore. So, I don't know how many of you know about this game. It just got released by EA, what, a week ago, 2 weeks?
A couple weeks ago. Within the last month. Since our last podcast, I think.
And so, the game, I mean, essentially what, you're playing God.
Yes.
In a way. I mean...
Yes.
You're basically starting organisms with a single cell, right?
Yeah, this is kind of like the spiritual successor to Sim Earth, which came out, God only knows when, early 90s. I think I was in college when it came out. So, but yeah, you're basically guiding a civilization from protozoa up to a spacefaring civilization. You're growing your own species.
So, you know, obviously this is being, this is very attractive to biology departments and, you know, it's really kind of funny because of the conversations that I've had in email, obviously, with other campuses, is that EA had no idea that this would be attractive to education. And everybody's like, what? Are you kidding? Like,
because right,
STEM's
like,
been used for, you know, policy studies and economics and all kinds of stuff like that. So,
yeah.
It's kind of funny that they didn't get it.
It is completely hilarious.
People called about licensing and they were like, no, you... Each one has its own serial number, and we can't help you with education pricing. So.
Right. And I, some of my friends got Spore, and they probably dropped off the face of the earth for a week or two.
Yeah, it seems that's how that happens.
From what I understand, it's not quite the whole evolution sandbox that people were expecting it to be. It's really kind of four sub-games kind of grouped together, but it seems pretty cool. There is going back to the iPod Touch and iPhone, there's actually one that you can play on your iPod Touch, and then you can take, like, pictures from your photo gallery and put it on your organism, so the organism has the photos rolled into it. So, I was tempted to get it, but yeah, so people are really excited about it.
So this is also leading to interesting conversations about, campus libraries, because if students need to play these games for coursework, then they need to provide them some way. And since there's only single licensing, some institutions are thinking about implementing like a game room.
Really?
Yeah. In the library. So,
interesting.
You know, I pitched it. I don't think it'll go anywhere, but it would be kind of interesting. So students, faculty, if you're listening and you think that would be a good idea,
so in Help News this week, the first thing I wanted to mention was just kind of something that's been coming up since the beginning of the school year. I think there's a little bit of confusion over this, so it's probably good to address it. And it's the question of network hubs or, well, just hubs, routers, whatever, that you might have brought with you to campus. Because you've got, like, this is a device that you use to split up one internet connection amongst, like, three or four different computers. So
right.
You want to connect your Xbox, you want to connect your laptop, you want to connect your printer. I don't know. There's a bunch of different devices you could hook up to this.
Your DVR,
definitely. So it's basically all these things that run off of a Ethernet port that aren't on wireless. And here's the thing. Under the old network, you could have a hub. But under the new network, you can't. So and when I say you can't, it just won't work because we have it disabled. So here's the deal. If you are in a dorm room and you used to use a hub, but you still want to be able to use one for all the reasons what we just described, we will lend you one. ITS will provide a multi-port solution that you can check out of the library, use for the semester, and renew it for the following semester, and you're good to go. If you are a faculty member or a staff member and you need additional network access in your office, then ITS will provide you with additional jacks. We'll actually pay to have those jacks installed in your office, or possibly you could do the hub thing, but more likely they would just be jacks installed.
Right.
So if you need one of these solutions or you want more information about it, you can contact the help desk at extension 5501 or send an email to help@lafayette.edu.
Yeah. So I guess another help news, we've sort of run out of workshops on the ITS site. We should be adding some shortly. One that we do know is upcoming that actually a librarian is going to lead is Rebecca Metzger will be running a session on RefWorks. So this isn't necessarily an IT solution. This is a library sort of program. But we're going to go ahead and, you know, sort of put it on our site and try and get people interested in it. RefWorks is really cool. It basically allows you to keep track of your references as you're doing research and stuff, and then it allows you to sort of compile them at the end, and it integrates with your paper as you're writing.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. So I think she's gearing it mostly to students, but obviously it's open to anyone who's interested in using this for sources.
Cool. All right. Well, we're always looking for feedback on the podcast. You can send it to us at itsblog@lafayette.edu.